Welcome to Your Path to FI. Master your money, unlock more time, and gain the freedom to live your life on your terms. We'll be talking to amazing people from the FI community to inspire, educate, and help you on your financial independence journey.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Your Path to FI. Today, we've got a great guest with us, Zach, and we also have the co-host, which is Logan, myself, and Zach. We're going to be talking through Zach's story. We're going to hear all about the things he's done to reach FI and all the things he's learned along the way. So with that, I will hand over to Zach to give us a quick intro, tell us about himself, and then tell us about his journey to FI. Welcome, Zach.
Thanks. I'm Zach. I'm super excited to be here. I'm a huge financial independence nerd. I've definitely fell head over heels for this community. So I'm honored. Thank you. I'm over in the United States. I'm on the western in a little state called Utah. I at least feel pretty young. I'm early 30s. My FI journey started, I suppose I was pretty young. Money's always been part, like a pretty key, important part of my life. I grew up in a big family with enough money to, that you know, we always had food and everything. But it was always a big enough issue where as a kid growing up, it was, we couldn't afford this, or we were pretty lucky to go on vacations every once in a while, kind of a deal. And then my dad still did a lot of little things that he probably didn't even think, I don't know, too much of, but little things like I was about 14 years old and he gave me $500 in an E-Trade account. I think it was technically money that he had, was already playing with, and handed over the account to me and said, here's $500, go learn the stock market, have fun with it. And I went and researched a bunch of companies, and plenty of companies that I didn't research at all, made every single mistake in the book. And then in the end, I didn't make anything. I lost virtually all of it to a little brokerage trading fees, because you got to pay $10 when you buy a stock and $10 when you sell a stock. But it planted a seed, like a investing seed, all throughout my childhood, little seeds planted. And then after that, let's see, I was about 17. I joined the military, went off. It kind of gave me a way to pay for college and all the other little benefits that the military provides you. It provided me with a little bit of money when you go through basic training and everything. I joined the National Guard, so it was just the reserves. It was only a part-time. It's not a lot of money when you're just a normal, like in your normal duties, but they send you to trainings and you get deployed every once in a while. I got deployed to Iraq, and that's when I stumbled into Mr. Money Mustache. And that was the big key pivotal point in my life, when all those seeds I had planted throughout my childhood, I realized what they were. I'm like, oh, this makes sense. I get it. And I just dove into that. I started with the very first blog post and read every single one of his articles. And then I went home from that deployment and I'm going through the house and finding all these random things that I could sell on Craigslist. I was head over heels, started riding my bike to work, drove my wife crazy a little bit, because she's like, I know you were sharing articles with me like while you're deployed, but she's like, I didn't read them. So I'm going around selling all this stuff, driving her crazy. She's like, just settle down, settle down. But I had bought a couple properties. These are more seeds. Like I was young, early 20s, and I had bought this house, and it needed a lot of work. And I got a really good deal on it. Lots of equity in this house. And I had no idea what I was doing. I didn't know anything about real estate besides, hey, this was something I wanted to learn about. So I told myself, I'm going to buy it. I'm going to do everything myself. And I started into it, and maybe just the nature of it is, you know, you paint a wall and it makes the rest of the house look kind of shabby. So I started tearing into it and I tore that house down to the studs, not knowing what I was doing, but getting on YouTube and looking up how to frame a wall, how to run plumbing. And I was about a year into it, where like I had a full-time job and I'm working my job and I'm driving over there, working into the night every single weekend. Any spare minute of my day was building that house. But I didn't know anything. I didn't know about hard money loans or anything you could borrow against the equity to pay a contractor to do those bigger tasks. So I was cashing my check, driving over to Home Depot, buying supplies, driving over there, working on it. After about a year, I stumbled into, or close to the end of a year, I stumbled into BiggerPockets, and I started kind of learning what real estate investing should look like. And once I saw the writing on the walls, I'm like, this is going to take me, at my rate, another year to sell this. But there was still equity in the house, so I listed it, sold fast, and I took what little I made off that house and rolled it into, if you account for my time, I made nothing on that house because a year of, I don't know, an extra 80 hours a week over there. I didn't value my time at all during my early years. Not until I learned about financial independence and did I actually start valuing my time.
So it sounds like this property experience, Zach, this happened before you discovered FI, right?
Oh, yeah. My apologies. I'm a little scatterbrained, but so I guess to stay true to the timeline, I started into these properties. I had this little story of just making a bunch of mistakes on my first property, realizing like, hey, I'm making a lot of mistakes. I'm going to make a lot more unless I like cut my losses. Let's get into something that's actually cash flowing. So I sold that property and rolled what little I had into a fourplex in kind of a up and coming neighborhood here in Salt Lake City. And that was a pretty pivotal point where I got the feel of like, oh, I'm cash flowing. This is what it's supposed to be like.
So I'm just intrigued to know more about this journey and property development and real estate. So it sounds like you got yourself quite a few properties going. And then what was your strategy? Were you sort of buy and hold? Did you keep renting them out? Was your intention to flip some of them? And then a second question is also, did you remain property focused or did you at some point start looking into investing elsewhere, perhaps in the stock market?
I was hardcore property focused to a fault. Like I was, before learning about FI, when I was starting into those properties, I was like, I had no reserves. Like every single dollar was going into the properties and I had no strategy. That first one was like, maybe I'll move into this. Maybe I'll just flip it. I didn't really know what I was doing. I just knew that it was a lot of work and I was just trying to get through that. But that second property, the fourplex, that's when I stumbled. Well, I didn't even know what it was at the time, but house hacking, like I can move into this fourplex and live in one of the units, rent out the other three, and the rent for the other three more than paid for all of my expenses. So I was living for free at that point. And that's when, again, I'm like, this is what it's supposed to be like. I had a good feeling about it. And ever since then, about every 6 months or a year, I was moving to the next property, but making sure I had a property where some portion of it was rentable. And right about then is when I went and deployed. I had about three properties under my belt at that point, deployed, learned about FI, and then everything changed when I got back home. I kind of like dialed that lever up that was already like, I was still like aggressively buying properties. But once I learned about FI, like I kind of stepped back. I built up larger reserves to make sure that if a property went bad, I could weather it. And learning about FI kind of also changed that from 100% properties to I should probably have a balance and put some in the stock market.
So what did that look like when you say put it in the stock market? What sort of method did you use? Was it index funds? Was it trading? How did you treat that?
It virtually 100% index funds. And I blame it on that $500 of E-Trade that, you know, I played with when I was a kid. But I've always liked picking individual stocks, but I do realize that it shouldn't ever be more than, or at least me personally, for other people it might be different, but for me personally, 5 to 10% of my total stock portfolio is what I kind of reserve for those individual stocks and the risky bets that I make. And some of them have been really good. It was a couple of years ago, I put a small amount into a famous electric car company, and that's turned out great for me. But it's nothing compared to just that general strategy of house hacking and just renting out portions of my house as I've built up these properties.
And when you speak about discovering FI, and there was this huge mindset shift you went through when you discovered FI, I think, first of all, I'm really curious to understand kind of why that mindset change happened and kind of what was it about discovering Mr. Money Research and FI which fueled that change? And then also, did your mindset change your strategy around your portfolio and properties outside of just, you know, dialing up the kind of aggressiveness of buying them?
Yeah, I clicked in so many different ways when I read that Mr. Money Mustache. And it might have been, some of it was out on a deployment. When you're deployed with the military in war, you're doing a lot of thinking about your life in general. So it was kind of an influential portion of my life. And I stumbled into a very influential blog, or at least for me at the time. Some people might look at me and be like, you're crazy. It's a cool blog, but like, but it's just, it was like the time of my life. It just hit at the right moment. And it just made so many things from earlier in my life make sense. Yeah, sorry. There was more to that question.
And just touching on that, so you referred to the blog, just to clarify for our audience that I'm sure you're talking about Mr. Money Mustache and all the wisdom that comes with that. So I'm guessing that was your behaviors around money, that you learned things about that, how to invest in a rational way. Mr. Money Mustache's blog is a gem. So I just want to clarify, is that the one you're talking about?
Yes, yes. And I know I'm pretty deep into this community, or at least like I've read everything, I've listened to all the podcasts. And I guess for new listeners that aren't that familiar, Mr. Money Mustache takes a pretty aggressive approach to financial independence. He's all about living on way, way less than you earn, investing that difference, but then also learning to enjoy the journey. Not only does riding your bike to work save you just an insane amount of money a year, but you get good exercise and it's just fun. And that's kind of his whole like mentality strategy, is like just realize that all the great fun things in life typically don't cost money. Or if they do, there's probably a free version of that.
So when you discovered FI, I mean, what actually changed? Did you work out your FI number? Did you cut your costs? Did you kind of double down on, you know, even more properties? I mean, what were the core things which really changed?
Yeah, I was investing in properties with like no reserves. At that time, if I would have had to replace, I don't know, an HVAC system or two HVAC systems, it probably would have tipped over that house of cards and it would have been bad. I got lucky. But FI taught me to be a little bit more conservative with that. I think it was that balance. It's like, hey, you should build up an emergency fund and you should build up a really big emergency fund and you should diversify a little from real estate into index funds. I think that's mostly what changed for me.
And how did FI shape your relationship with your partner? I think you mentioned that there were times when she was kind of scratching her head, wondering why you were running around selling things on Craigslist. I'm sure there were some good and more challenging changes to your relationship. Could you share some of that with us?
Yeah, no, my wife's awesome. I think she's just realized that I love this. I love money. I love investing. Love it to a point where she just kind of like, you do your thing. But like, I'll cue her in on little things. I will give her as much as she wants to be involved with. But for the most part, like, for example, I was 30 and I do a lot of my, not budgeting, but like net worth tracking and everything on personal capital. And I was 30 and I was looking at personal capital because about every month I go in and just update things, check things. And we just crossed over that 1 million US dollars mark. And I called her over. I'm like, hey, babe, come check it out. We're millionaires. She's like, oh, cool. Went back to helping out with the kids. But yeah, it's kind of my thing. And I don't know, I think she thinks of it as like a hobby of mine that she just lets me do. To be fair, it's been great for all of us. So
And I know after discovering FI, Zach, there was a bit of a hustle mentality which was developed. I'm definitely keen to hear a little bit more about that.
I've spent my whole life with little hustles. At some point was going around and buying books from yard sales for like real cheap, 50 cents a book. And then I would come home and I'd list them all on Amazon to try and make 10 bucks a book or something like that. And then I had this funny thing I did kind of all throughout my life. I initially did the first thing when I was in college. Like I was going to college in 2000 during the big financial crisis, 2008, between 2008, 2010. And I was trying to get a job and nobody would have me. I was trying to be a bank teller. Like, I don't know why that was glamorized. Maybe again, money growing up. I liked it, wanted more of it. I thought being close to money as a bank teller, I could learn more about it, but nobody would give me a job. So one of the things that hustle mentality, I just started going out. What I did was I stumbled upon this blog article called One Red Paperclip. It's this Canadian guy that took a red paperclip and then just started trading it, just direct trades. And he started in his, like with his coworkers and, hey, I'll trade you this red paperclip for, you know, that mug on your desk. And he started to document his little trades. And eventually he traded that little red paperclip up to a house in Canada. I was super inspired by that story. And I went out, found an old computer, and I went on to Craigslist and listed it. I'm like, hey, trade this for anything. And I would go out and find other people's little BlackBerry phones. I'm like, hey, I'll trade you this computer for your BlackBerry phone. And I was pretty successful with it. And I worked from that little old computer to this really well-restored 1970s Volkswagen Beetle. And I didn't keep going after that. I ended up just selling that for cash. But I was making more money doing that than I would have as a part-time teller. So me just hustling through college was getting me more. And to be fair, like a lot more life experience negotiating. I would use those skills later in life, buying houses.
Yeah, it's so much fun when you can see it as something that brings in some money, but is also educational and enjoyment. And just hearing your story of going from an old computer to a car is really impressive. It sounds like you did that all through trading and there was no exchange of money. It was just trading items. Is that right?
Yeah. Yep. So I set rules for myself because I, like him, was like, hey, I'll put it on a blog. Maybe I can monetize the blog. And so, yeah, those were my own little internal rules. Is I couldn't put any extra cash into it. They had to be direct, straight trades.
Such a cool idea. Yeah. I'm currently learning to DJ. So over the weekend, I was looking for some DJ equipment, a controller and speakers. And within only a few hours of looking on the secondhand market, I really started to understand the price of a DJ controller and what that is on the secondhand market and what it is brand new. And between looking on Google, just through the different retailers and looking at eBay, I started to find inefficiencies. So I basically bought myself three DJ controllers, although I only need one because I know that I can sell them and make a profit and probably end up paying not much for that single controller that I'm going to hold on to. So yeah, that's my little story of finding inefficiencies and how much fun they can be. And so one question I wanted to ask you was about when you said you've hit that amazing milestone of being a millionaire at age 30, how do you measure that? So quite often it's interesting to understand how different people calculate the net worth. Do you include the equity in each of your properties and add that together? So to actually access that $1 million, would you need to sell some properties or is that just spare cash and your stocks? How does that work? How do you calculate that?
At the time, we were probably about 60% in real estate equity and then 40% in stocks and retirement funds. Whenever I calculate my net worth, I will include equity because it's illiquid, but it still counts. But I'll always take a conservative estimate and only count the equity that I would realistically see if I sold the house. So I would take a percentage off the top because I'm going to have to pay a realtor, any of those closing costs. So I'm really conservative with valuing my rental properties in that manner. And then now I've shifted. It's not quite my real estate isn't as high as of my portfolio. I guess technically it is. My investment strategy is kind of like a three-legged stool. I've got a third in index funds, a third in rental properties that we personally own, and then a third in larger apartment syndications, hard money lending. That's kind of my like everything else category.
Interesting. And I think earlier we were discussing before we started having a chat, and you mentioned that you, I think it was 5 years between reading the Mr. Money Mustache blog and reaching FI. Is that right?
Yeah.
That's incredible.
To be fair, I had a little bit of a head start because I had three properties before finding out about Mr. Money Mustache, but I probably could have also still done it in 5 years. Yeah, I don't know. The power of just the mentality of once you realize how to do it and once you have that goal in mind. My goal never was a net worth figure. It was a monthly income. It was, can I cover my expenses with, at the time, it was rental property income. So that was kind of more than a net worth goal. It was just, can I cover my expenses with passive income?
And right now, where are you at in that journey? Because we heard you discovered you discovered Mr. Money Mustache and FI, you hit the $1 million mark. Kind of in your journey now, are you FI? Are you almost FI?
I'm definitely FI. I'm still doing everything, all the same stuff that got me here. I'm still house hacking. My net worth has skyrocketed since that time. We've had a really good market, even with a slight little pullback recently. Like, the market's been really good. The real estate market, everything's been really good, but I'm still house hacking. My basement's rented out. I have a studio apartment above my garage that's rented out. So I'm living in my current house still for free. I'm playing with, I guess, the healthy balance. So after a little while, I quit my full-time job. Coming off of after hitting FI, I got a pretty good remote job offer, and I had never worked remote before. I was pretty interested. I wanted to give it a run. It was doing something I really liked. I have a career in IT, and then it shifted to cybersecurity, and I really enjoy that. I'm like, I work remote cybersecurity. I think it sounds great. We'll try it out. I didn't need to, but it's amazing once you don't need the money, how much more enjoyable it makes working. After working there for a little while, I started to, I don't know, see the writing on the walls of, it was more of my current position. I learned everything I could from that position. I wasn't having as much fun with it as I was. And I didn't want it to completely burn me out of what I enjoyed doing. So I quit, but I didn't have anything to do once I quit. I have hobbies, but they're all hobbies, and like real estate investing, it was passive. I thought I could quit and then just do that to where it could fill my time and provide meaning and passion. And it didn't. That was all stuff I was already doing while I was working. So I didn't have really anything to fill that void. Luckily, it was coming into summertime, so I could go travel with the kids and stuff. But I'm still playing with like the right amount of meaningful work and then leisure time. So that's still something I'm working on. But full FI is where I'm at right now, I think. It's such a weird like gradient and scale. And maybe my full FI is different than somebody else's FI, but my expenses, and I live fairly lavishly. We do a lot of traveling. A lot of it's with travel hacking. Another, I guess, subculture that I was introduced to once I met the FI community. There's so many other little like really interesting, fun things you can do. We're just a big community of hackers and optimizers. It's been great.
Yeah, and what I was hearing you saying was talking about how now that you're FI, feeling that sort of void and sort of pondering what you might do with that spare time, and then just curious about whether that would be one of the things you might mention to our audience in terms of a hint or a tip, like try and figure out what you're going to do once you're FI, because it's really good to know that in advance. I think people get very excited about the idea of having no more job, but it takes up a big part of our lives. And when it's suddenly not there anymore, it can leave quite a void. With that in mind, what other sort of challenges have you faced? It sounds like this has been a challenge, but what's been difficult for you on this journey that you've been on?
Yeah, I think that's, I mean, mostly having enough hobbies and passions, and not just because you can't just pull the trigger, retire, and just watch Netflix and even travel. And you can't just, some people can do it. I've got kids. And even if I didn't have kids, like, it's kind of fun to have, or it's nice to come back to a community, you know, I have a home base. I love traveling, but I don't know if I could do the travel for years at a time kind of a deal. So it was mostly, I think, my biggest challenge. And something, again, I'm still kind of struggling with is I probably should have, while I was in my, you know, hardcore saving, investing phase, stopped to smell the roses a little, develop more hobbies that I could transition into after pulling that early retirement, making that transition over. But what I would recommend, I think, somebody that was in my same shoes or a younger version of me is try a lot of different hobbies. Like, I mean, now's your chance. Go explore. Right now, I'm trying to get more involved with my community, maybe run for my local community board. I'm really passionate about, and I kind of blame it on the community and Mr. Money Mustache, but here in the United States, we don't have amazing bike infrastructure. So I'm getting more involved with the community on those kinds of issues, going to city council meetings and things like that to fight for bike lanes and better sidewalks and just the simple things that I'm sure, you know, a lot of Europeans will take for granted. But here in the United States, it's a struggle to get around if you don't have a car.
One point in your story, which I took note of, Zach, was that moment when I think you were 14 and your dad, you know, set up that trading account for you. And that was maybe one of the first seeds in your kind of financial journey. You mentioned, you know, now you're FI, you love spending time with your kids and traveling around. I mean, what's your kind of take on potentially starting that process of maybe planting some of those seeds for your kids in terms of getting them, you know, thinking a little bit more about money and finances? And they might be way too young for this. If they are, I'll retract my question, but have you got any thoughts on that?
Yeah, they're pretty young. The oldest one is 7, but he's still like, I'm itching like to teach him as soon as I can. I would love to give him a little bit of stocks to play with, little portfolio that he can make a ton of mistakes with. More than anything, like, I don't want to teach him what's right. I want to like give it to him and just let him make the mistakes. So as soon as he's old enough to understand at least the concepts, that's the plan. I don't want to be overbearing, but I do want to plant those seeds at the same time, just kind of like what my dad did with me.
It sounds like you'd be opening an account for him and letting him go for it with some trading. What sort of guidelines would you give him? Because I think, how would you feel if your son sort of was a teenager and becoming a stock picker and not interested in boring old index funds? Would you would you let him just run with it, or would you? What sort of guidance would you give him on the different approaches for investing?
I think when he's at that point, I don't know. Because yeah, no, that's true. Like, I don't believe in stock picking. There is like 5% of my portfolio that I kind of reserve for those risky bets. And there are some companies out there that I'm really passionate about, and I'll go and buy the individual stocks. But again, just a minuscule portfolio. So I think maybe learning by example, you know, when he's that age, just walk him through kind of what I do currently. Hopefully I'm a good enough example that he'll take the hint.
Awesome. Great to hear. And I think just before we wrap things up, Zach, there's one question which I'll kick myself if I don't ask it, because I've been thinking about it ever since you mentioned your paperclip-esque story, which was, what on earth did you trade up to get a Volkswagen? What was the pre-trade for the Volkswagen?
It was another car. The blog is still out there. It's not a beautiful blog by any means. So hit me up after and I'll show it to you. But it went like this old computer that was running XP, Windows XP. And I knew a lot about computers. So I had like got a computer and I fixed it. And then I listed it for trade. And I think I traded that one for a BlackBerry. I went through a phase of a couple phones. And then one of the big trades was a brand new smartphone. This is when like they were the new hotness. But I traded a brand new smartphone for an old car. It was like a 1985 Chevy Celebrity, but it still ran and it had surprisingly low miles. Like I could drive it around. And then I started trading those cars, like that car for, it was a pickup truck, this really old Camaro. It might have been that Camaro that I traded for the Volkswagen, but it was a cool car.
What a cool story. Yeah, it sounds like your approach to throwing, just chucking things at the wall and seeing what sticks is really taking you very far in your journey to FI. And just one last question is, people find the whole FI journey is, some people find it as an impossible thing and find it very difficult to be motivated to actually want to try and work towards FI. And what would your one bit of advice to them be?
Financial independence, and not even full FI, any level of FI brings so much freedom and confidence. I mentioned it before, but working, it's just having even a full-time job feels so much better when you know that you have the stability that you don't have to, like you could, even if you could just quit your job and, you know, take a 6-month sabbatical or something like that, that provides so much confidence and freedom. If your boss is breathing down your neck for a project you just don't, you aren't passionate about, you have the confidence to tell him no. And that there's so much, I don't know, value that you can get, extra value that financial independence, or again, any level will provide you. So it's, I don't know, if you're pursuing FI, I mean, I obviously recommend it to anyone, but there's, I mean, what's the worst that can happen? You end up with some money. If you decide you don't like having money, I guess you could go buy a boat or something. But like, honestly, what's the worst that could happen?
What a note to end on. Zach, it's been so awesome to hear your story. Super excited to get this one out there. So any final words before we call it a day?
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. I've had a weird, crazy journey, I guess, threw a lot of stuff at the wall, saw what stuck, still trying to figure things out, but I'm enjoying it. It's a lot of fun. I appreciate the opportunity. This has been great. My very first podcast, so I don't know, stumble around my words a lot, but hopefully somebody got something out of it.
Who knows, maybe you'll be doing your own podcast soon and make some money out of that. Awesome, Zach. Great to meet you.
Thanks again.
Thanks for listening to Your Path to FI. If you have any questions, reach out to us. You may send us an email to podcast@topia-app.com or via our podcast community. Please see the link in the show notes. None of the content on this podcast should be construed as financial advice. That's all from us for now. Catch you next time on your path to financial independence.